Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Series 3 of Talking New Energy. We've got some exciting topics and guests lined up for the coming weeks as we continue to explore how the transition from old to new energy gathers pace. For those new to the podcast, my name is John Slow, host of this podcast and a director at Delta EE. We're recording this episode today in the first week of September, and being in the UK, it's slightly ironic that the topic for today's podcast is the influence that Brussels and the European Commission, European Union, has over the energy sector. They're certainly having a big influence over the UK's political scene at the moment, even if they won't, or maybe they won't, when the UK leaves, if it leaves. But that would be a very different podcast. So let's turn our attention back to energy and away from the UK's political woes at the moment. So the focus of today will be Brussels and what policy coming out of Brussels and out of the European Commission means for the energy transition in Europe. I'm joined by three guests. Let's start with two based in Brussels. So hello, Frauke.
Hello, John.
Frauke, you run a trade association called Smarten. Can you just tell us in a nutshell what Smarten does and the members that you represent and what you do?
Sure. So Smarten stands for Smart Energy Europe, and we're the European Business Association for Digital and Decentralized Energy Solutions in a decarbonized, interconnected European system. So unlike your typical business association representing a specific sector, be it solar, heat pumps, batteries, etc., as Smarten, we see our role as really taking an integrated perspective at looking how the different solutions can interact in the energy system.
Does that mean your membership is quite wide then? Because if you're a storage association, your members tend to be battery companies, for example. What's your membership like?
Yes, indeed. I think you're right. It is quite wide in the sense that we look at various players, both on the technical and service side, providing decentralized digital energy solutions. So our membership includes innovators from aggregators, energy suppliers, data management, finance, research. So basically, yeah, all business players somehow involved in the digital decentralized dimension of the energy transition.
Great.
And a lot of new market entrants, I should emphasize.
Yes, certainly. It's not just one set of players in the energy market today. There's a whole variety of players coming from different angles.
That's right.
So thanks, Frauke. My second guest, hello, Federica.
Hi, good morning.
So, Federica, similar to Frauke, you run a trade association, the European Heating Industry. And this one may require a bit less explanation, but can you tell us a bit about your association and your members and the job you're doing for them?
Yeah, so the European Heating Industry Association is the industry association of the manufacturers of, well, as the name says, heating appliances. Our members are big market leaders in Europe for all heating technologies. So from those that produce so-called heat generators, all technologies for that, so boilers to heat pumps, solar thermal, biomass boilers, micro combined heat and power, hybrids, all sorts of technologies that you need to generate heat both in a domestic but also in a commercial and industrial setting. We also have tried to cover the entire heating system in a building. Therefore, we have also manufacturers of components and system integrators, such as the smart meters, the thermostats producers, and finally the so-called heat emitters, therefore manufacturers of radiators, underfloor heating and cooling technologies, so as to have really to cover the entire heating system as well as portfolio of technologies for heating in buildings.
Great. So everyone involved in keeping our buildings comfortable and pleasant to be in across Europe.
That's right. The space heating, this also, I should say, is also hot water production. So it's not just keeping yourself warm, but actually allowing you to have a nice warm shower in the morning or evening.
Very important. Frauke Federico, could you give our listeners a very brief feel for your day job? So you're in Brussels, you're representing a sector or a group of companies around a specific theme. You're trying to represent their interests in how policies developed. There'll be no such thing as a typical day, but what might a day or a week involve, or how can you help us understand what the day job is like?
If I give it a try. So I think much of our day job involves talking to the European institutions, be it the European Commission, European Parliament, also the national representations in Brussels and in member states, to understand what is going on, what are the priorities that the institutions see coming up in the energy field, and what are they working on? And then, of course, to express our views towards them, and our views means the views of our members. Part is talking to basically the decision makers, but then in order to be able to express our views, of course, the other big part is interacting with our membership in committees, in task forces, in working groups, in conference calls, understanding what their needs are, what the barriers are that they are facing in the energy system, in regulation, and bring these messages to the decision makers, but of course also convey to our members what is happening in Brussels, what are the next steps on the agenda, and understand their views and opinions on it. So in a way, I see our role both as shaping the European agenda, bringing to decision makers what the market, what the sector needs, and suggesting new policy initiatives, but also influencing the agenda that's already there and bringing our members' input to the discussions that are already happening on the Brussels agenda.
Federica, I guess that those discussions, that influence can take the form of a conference, a one-to-one meeting, a variety of different forms of discussing and influencing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's different formats. The of course the one-to-one meeting. You start with a one-to-one meeting because you are in Brussels, because the network is so large, but then you go on to indeed conferences and workshops and big stakeholder meetings, where actually the Commission is required to listen to all of the stakeholders, so-called stakeholders, therefore all the organizations, whether it's industry, whether it's consumer organizations, representatives of member states that have a stake in a certain policy. I should add, I mean, I think our day, my day is very similar to how Frauke described it, because it's really, we are really looking at a very strong link with our own members. So we spend a lot of time with our members understanding what their needs are. And we also spend a lot of time understanding what the European legislator is intending to do and is doing in order to explain it to our own members. Legislation on technologies such as heating technologies is very technical from one side, but it increasingly becomes also political. And this is something that you need to be present in Brussels to really capture and then influence. I should add one other element because it's linked to the type of membership that we have. We don't only have as members companies, but we also have national associations of heating companies in the various markets. So I think for us it's important to keep that link to the national market because, and I think this is one of the topics that you mentioned at the beginning, the legislation that is passed by the European Union is actually having a very strong influence to what happens in the national market. So for us, it's important to keep that link very strong through our national associations.
Well, let's pick up that link now. So it's not always straightforward, I think, in if you're working in one particular country, to understand the influence that European legislation and policy has. And coming back to what I said I wouldn't do, I think many people in the UK haven't fully understood it or appreciated, but we'll live with the decision we've taken, probably. Lucas, could you, my third guest, Lucas Bergman, colleague here at Delta.
Hi, John.
Lucas, could you highlight an example of the influence that Brussels has had, if we look at where we are today in the energy sector, to help our listeners understand how important European legislation can be if you're in one particular country?
Yes, certainly. I mean, we have to probably differentiate between two different types of impact. Direct impact from regulations. So, for example, energy efficiency related regulations like eco-design, which everybody will know from the disappearance of incandescent light bulbs, or from the disappearance of or the demise of non-condensing boilers in the heating market these days. But then we also have
so on that one, Lucas, if I'm in one country and I can't buy an incandescent light bulb, that's not down to necessarily a decision my government took. That's down to legislation coming out of Europe.
Exactly. This is basically down to energy efficiency standards that have been set on European level and that apply directly in every European state.
Okay, thanks.
And then on the other hand, we've got directives, and they just set a framework for member states for pieces of legislation that the member states have to implement, but they only provide a guideline on how those should look like or what the targets of those legislation should be. And a very good example here is, for example, the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, which has been setting the target for member states to achieve nearly zero energy buildings in new build. And which in future is going to push them towards achieving a renovation of the building stock as well.
Okay, so those new build regulations, if we look across Europe, they're all moving in the same direction. They may be implemented slightly differently, but the fact they're moving all in the same direction arises from that European directive.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Quite significant influences then and on policy.
Yes, and they have really been, I mean, these examples that I've just named, they have really been shaping the market, the types of products that you can put on the market, etc. And this is not only the case for products like heating or light bulbs, etc., but it's also the case for how players like energy suppliers can operate in the market.
Yeah. Okay, or even network companies having to be separate business entities from a vertically integrated utility.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think now is a fascinating time to look at how Brussels will shape our future. When we look at the transition from old to new energy, the current market roles, the current market structures are in many ways going to be thrown up in the air. And how they come down will depend very much on the framework laid out at a European level. So I'd like now to look at how European legislation, regulations and policy is likely to shape the transition from old to new energy. Frauke, can I start with you and your focus on digitalization, decentralization, flexibility? How the market roles for an aggregator, for example, weren't thought of when the electricity market structures were devised probably 20 years ago. So can you help us understand how Europe is likely to influence electricity market structures or energy market structures going forwards?
Yeah, sure. I think especially in the fields that you mentioned, we've had quite some big developments in Europe, especially over the last 2 years, with the beginning of 2019 seeing the adoption of a big European clean energy package for all Europeans, it's called, which is a package of various directives and regulations, as Lucas has explained. And from our perspective, in terms of the energy transition, in terms of consumer empowerment, digitalization, there are a couple of very interesting dimensions. One is that this package ensures in the first place that active energy consumers and energy communities have the right to exist, have the right to self-generate electricity, to install storage and so on, but also to access all markets, to have fair access conditions to networks and so forth, cost-reflective network tariffs, all things that are not a given in many European countries today and that need to be implemented.
Okay, so if we take that one, Frauke, then looking at if you're in one particular country, Portugal, Romania, France, whichever, wherever it is, and you're not able to do certain things as an active energy consumer with a battery, with a solar panel, with smart charging of an electric vehicle, then your country will be forced to enable you to participate more in the energy market. Is that a
fair thing? That's right. So that's the principles that the European framework sets. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say in detail on how countries have to make it possible, but they have to make it possible within the logic of their national frameworks.
Yeah. Okay. And the consequence if they don't make it possible, does that, what happens in those sorts of circumstances?
Well, the theoretical formal approach is always that companies or people can go to the European, well, through the legislative process, legal process, not legislative, legal process, in the end to the European Court of Justice, which can essentially force a country to implement the legislation. Most often it doesn't come to that, which is a very lengthy process. Yeah. Most often it's basically the cooperation with the European institutions, also the cooperation across member states that leads countries to already implement legislation. Most of the time it does get done anyway, but of course there are cases when countries are particularly slow. And to be fair, the European enforcement process can be powerful, but it can also take a lot of time.
Okay, so let's assume people play by the rules and active energy customers or energy consumers, communities find it much easier to take more ownership, to participate in electricity markets, to develop both PV and storage themselves, for example. What else do you see either out of that clean energy package or key issues shaping the future of the energy system?
I think another very, very big part is a general market-based approach. Mm-hmm. For the European energy market energy system, and a very important new dimension, access in all markets for decentralized solutions. So what does that mean? It means on the one side that, for instance, system operators, network operators should procure services via the market. And then for all markets, whether it's for system services or whether it's the wholesale markets, all markets should be open to decentralized solutions, including to pooled resources. That means that entrance barriers need to be removed. The markets have been defined sometimes 50 or more years ago based on the technologies we knew at the time. So in some markets you have entrance thresholds of even 50 megawatts, which makes no sense anymore in today's reality. So what the new legislation is saying, that these entrance barriers need to be removed. We need product definitions that reflect the needs of the systems rather than the capabilities of old technologies.
So this will have the effect then of opening up markets to more players or making it easier for customers to participate in markets.
That's right. And also there are some specific provisions for that. So for instance, that countries need to have a framework for independent aggregators of demand response to be able to access the market, which is by far from being reality in many European countries today. So there are very concrete elements there.
And how soon will we see that in manifesting itself in countries, Frauke? You said it's been agreed at the European level or being agreed at the European level. If you're in a particular country in Europe, how long would you have to wait if for this to become reality?
It depends on the specific provisions we're talking about. So when we're talking about, for example, the the changing of product definitions in markets, it's relatively fast because here we're talking about a regulation that directly applies to national law. So for example, member states already have to report in January next year how they want to eliminate wholesale price restrictions.
Okay.
So some aspects on other elements. Then. Some aspects, yes. Yeah.
But some will take years to manifest themselves, and
some will take 2, 3, even 4 years in some cases.
Yeah.
But the most important provisions actually are starting to be implemented. And I think one thing is the deadlines that are set by European law, but the other thing is what happens in reality. And what we see in reality is that member states often already start to look into transposing things into national law while the legislation is still being negotiated. So even before the package was adopted, a couple of member states moved into the direction of where the European legislation was going because they knew that that was what was going to be coming.
What countries would you identify as examples of really progressive who are embracing this approach that the European Commission is laying out?
Oh, there are so many dimensions.
No, it's a difficult question.
That so. It's difficult to say. Yeah, I think it really depends on what it is. For example, when we are looking at the role of distribution network operators or distribution system operators in procuring flexibility and using really the market for better congestion management, for more efficient system management. Mm-hmm. I think the UK is a leader who has changed incentive structures already long before the European legislation established that we needed to change incentive structures away from a complete CapEx approach.
Yeah.
So yeah, here the UK is a leader. When we look at access, for instance, for demand response aggregators to the market, we can rather look to countries like France, Switzerland, Belgium, who have looked into very specific frameworks on how to make it possible for aggregators to access the market without depending on a prior agreement of a customer supplier who is often a competitor. So there, yeah, it's a different set of countries. So, and so we could go on. I think we will always find some examples on one thing and some on another.
Okay. So Federica, let's look now at the heating sector. In some ways, I think the heating sector has been the poor relation in energy policy, and it's not got the attention that electricity and transport have got. But can you tell us a bit about how much attention the heating sector is getting in Brussels and what the focus of that attention is?
Yeah, so you're right. The heating sector has been a bit the forgotten sector for several years in terms of specific policy of the EU, and that's probably due to the fact that it's just very difficult to regulate. It's very fragmented. Imagine having to regulate millions of single family houses or apartments and consumers. So it's certainly been a challenge, but in the last few years there has been an increased attention on this sector. And in fact, in about 5 years ago, the European Commission actually published a heating and cooling strategy. So really a paper, broad paper, that would give a direction to how to deal with this sector in view of one very important objective, which is the decarbonization, so the reduction of CO2 emissions for the building sector. And this indeed is the big headings under which we are working, the decarbonization agenda. Decarbonization with a target date, for Europe that Europe has set for itself is 2050, by which date we as Europe needs to have basically cut CO2 emissions by almost 90%, by almost the entirety in comparison to 1990 levels.
And Federica, how is that manifesting itself in terms of impacts on the heating markets? And how do you think will be the big impacts in the next years?
Well, the European Commission has basically been working on both fuels policy. So how to decarbonize electricity first, that's been a long time already in the making, and more recently, decarbonization of gas. So all sorts of options for renewable gases, biomethane, hydrogen is picking up again as a hot topic in Brussels. But specifically, and this of course has a very, you know, big impact on the heating market. And then of course, with a much more direct impact, there's product policy on technologies for heating and cooling. So for heating specifically, there has been the eco-design policy that was mentioned earlier, which sets minimum standards of efficiency. So if you don't have a heater that has, you know, a sufficient efficiency level, you cannot place it on the market anymore. And this is why we don't have standard boilers or non-condensing boilers anymore on the European market, except for some, you know, specific exceptions because of certain types of buildings, which is a little bit what actually the UK has done several years ago already. This is now actually a policy throughout the European Union. And this, you know, to go back to your initial points about, you know, talking about the influence of Europe on member states during Brexit times is very interesting, because I think a lot of these policies have actually, on the heating sector, have actually been taken by UK policies, which was actually the first country who had a heating strategy upon which the European Union has based its own heating and cooling strategy.
Well,
so I think it's a little bit of an irony there.
I hope, Federica, you don't forget us if we do end up leaving the European Union. So, Lucas, you've been working in the heating sector for a long time. Any sort of observations on what Federica's been saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's been quite clear that the biggest movements in the heating markets over the last couple of years have been triggered by changes in EU legislation, and in particular, the sector, where it is or has been the easiest to legislate, but also via the product policies. But Federica, I've got a question for you. So, you said that one of the challenges around heat is that it is very, very close to the consumers. Consumers are really at the heart of the heating sector. And we've heard from Frauke that the role of the consumer is changing, and then that there is empowerment of the consumer on the European level. And it would be interesting, what's your view on how this empowerment that is currently happening more in the electricity side of the sector, how is that going to affect how people might be heating their homes in the future? Or how is the role of the consumer changing on the heating side?
Yeah, so certainly there is the phenomenon, let's call it like this, of digitalization or smartening of the energy system, it is hitting also, or it's defining, in fact, more and more the heating markets as well. So heating technologies nowadays are not just a heat generator, but they are part of a system, and smart heating is now a definition that is fitting more and more the technologies that are put on the market. So it's not just a boiler, not just a heat pump that gets put on the market, but increasingly there is a smart heating control that you can operate as a consumer from home, but of course also from outside your home, meaning you're going on holiday, turn off everything, come back and can turn on your heating at a distance before you arrive home to get a warm house. But it's also increasingly, there are increasingly ways for the professionals to help out and to have a role in how the heating system is working in your home, so you can have maintenance or preventive maintenance done remotely by the installer, by the maintenance company on the heating system, so that, you know, it prevents breaking down a certain part, so can prevent the customer remaining without any heating for a day because you can see that it's a part at fault, and then you can send the installer, the maintenance guy, with the correct piece to replace it. So there's much more involvement possible, both from the side of the consumer and how the consumer can actually simply enjoy its comfort at home. But there's also much more interaction with the grid possible with smart devices that can potentially talk also with the grid and therefore give signals. And so we have a role also for thermal storage, which is of course one of the big challenges, being energy storage, particularly in an increasingly renewables dominated world. You need to store energy, and there are technologies from the heating sector that can help therefore mitigate that that issue.
So,
both in terms of, you know, hot water storage or heat pumps, electricity-based appliances.
Federica, you talked earlier about, and Lucas, you've mentioned the ratcheting up of standards for product efficiency. They'll reach a point at which those standards struggle to be made any stricter. There are theoretical limits about how efficient an appliance can be. Federica, you mentioned fuels being decarbonized, whether that's green gas or renewable electricity. So we can decarbonize the fuels, we can ratchet up the efficiency of the appliances. Federica, how much do you see controls being a focus? So as you mentioned, the integration of electric heating in smart grids, for example, is that a, do you see the controls side being a focus of Brussels policy?
Yeah, definitely. It's increasingly in the focus because of this reason, that they realize that there is a potential for energy efficiency, for empowering the consumer, and therefore there is increasing focus on coupling technology, which has reached a certain, you know, limit of efficiency, with smart controls that would enhance even more the efficiency of the whole system, and therefore there's policies that are being discussed at the moment that would set eco-design standards also for building automation and control systems, for example.
Okay.
So increasingly we're looking at legislation that looks at the full system and not just at parts of it.
Yeah, I think, Federica, you're mentioning a very important keyword there, and that's system efficiency, because I think indeed there's the product efficiency as such and then the interaction of everything into a smart system. And I think this is what's driving quite a lot of developments in the heating sector now. And I thought it was interesting. So, Federica, you mentioned a lot about what is possible now on the heating side for mm-hmm. customer engagement, for better services. Which is great stuff going on. And then I think looking at it from the electricity side, it's also in a way, on the one side, it seems necessary. We need to go into it because the heating sector, together with the transport sector, by the way, offers a great flexibility potential to also help integrate variable renewables in the electricity side. So, for instance, to use the heat storage while my solar panels are producing and I have a lot of electricity surplus, so that my boiler is warm and I can have a hot shower or a warm house in the evening when the sun has set, as an example. So I think, yeah, it's becoming also necessary that the sectors interact more and heating becomes smarter to interact with the decarbonized system. But I think it's also becoming a lot more attractive in the sense that, well, as a prosumer, for instance, I may want to link my heating system, my electric vehicle, whatever it may be, with my own self-generation unit of solar or whatever I may have. But also from a systems perspective, as we are moving into smarter market signals, as we're moving into more flexible pricing or the possibility to value my flexibility to the market via an aggregator, I may very well want to use my heating unit to get money for steering it flexibly without my comfort being impacted in any way.
I think what we're starting to see now is a blurring of the sectors, or to use a word that's quite common now, sector coupling, or more integration of different energy vectors. And we'll be looking at the topic of this and home energy management in podcasts in this current series. Time is unfortunately, as always, getting the better of us. So I normally at this point in proceedings bring out our Talking New Energy crystal ball. However, it's broken at the moment because I tried to use it to predict what would happen in the UK Parliament this week, and it broke. So I'm going to ask each of my guests to very briefly, one thing that people should look for and pay attention to in Brussels at the moment. So keeping it brief, what would be one area, topic, piece of policy that you'd encourage people to look at and keep their eyes open to?
So maybe I start from the side of heating. What is really popping up at the moment is the topic of the renewable gas, and there is going to be a new gas package here in Brussels. They call it package, which means just a bunch of laws that will look at this. And I think for a sector which has been and is still quite dominated by gas, this is going to be an interesting element to look at.
Okay, thanks. Renewable gases. Frauke?
Well, we touched a lot upon the questions of prosumers, the new role of customers, and the role of sector integration. And I think these are some of the big themes that are going to stay with us. And what I would like to look out for is for the new European Commission, the new Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, announced a couple of very interesting things. A European Climate Pact with regions, local communities, civil society, a sustainable European investment plan, and numerous other initiatives. And what I would like to see is how this brings forward electric vehicle infrastructure, building renovation, and other aspects to really make this sector integration, sector coupling advance and help real prosumer-consumer engagement in the energy transition.
Okay, thank you. And last but not least, Lucas.
Yeah, from my perspective, I think one of the very interesting things that have come out of Brussels, but that will lead to action in the member states over the coming years, is from the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, the renewed focus on renovation. Member states are now obliged to provide strategies for renovating their building stock out to 2050 and to reduce carbon emissions from existing buildings.
And we all know that existing buildings make up the vast majority of carbon emissions in the building sector.
Heating in particular. Yep. And this is really going to shake up the heating
Okay. Well, we'll have to leave it there. So thank you, Lucas, Federica, and Frauke, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, as always, to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and excuse my comments about the UK's political situation. And we welcome you back next week. Thank you and goodbye.